The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth.
Let's come together on this. We firmly believe that every person has a right to live. That's a quote. Liberals and conservatives can surely get behind something like that, right? It's unifying. It's inspiring. It's not just American. It is human. And it is rare and nice to hear an organization take a stand like that. And it's great to see organizations getting awards for taking a stand like that. We firmly believe that every person has a right to live. This week, this organization won the Lasker Award, one of the nation's most prestigious prizes in medicine. Fortunately, the Lasker Award includes a $250,000 prize because this year's winner is cash-strapped and can use it. Well, it's not cash-strapped yet, but it fears it might be soon. And with President Trump and the Republican Congress threatening to block it from receiving Medicaid reimbursements and everything, it's probably going to be cash-strapped. I don't know about you, but I'm sick of all of the politicians that are going to try to withhold funds from an organization that provides health services to millions of people. And in the announcement of the award, it says, although the organization is most famous for aiding women, it helps men as well, end quote. Wow. Now, if we're being honest, that part of the award announcement is a little misleading because the organization is actually more famous for disposing of that pesky health issue of having a baby in the womb. Now, I know things have changed and maybe men can have babies in today's world. Maybe I'm having one right now. The world is upside down and I just don't know it or won't admit it because I'm such a bigot. This year's Lasker Award goes to Planned Parenthood. But don't worry, because in the announcement, the Lasker Award people made sure to say that abortions are only 3% of the health services that Planned Parenthood provides. And last year, that 3% only included 328,348 babies that were killed. That's it. This week, Planned Parenthood's president, Cecil Richards, emailed supporters expressing outrage over President Trump's plan to end DACA, which is right in, I mean, right when you think of Planned Parenthood, you think immediately DACA. She writes, apparently without any sense of irony, here at Planned Parenthood, quoting, "We believe, we firmly believe that every person has the right to live, to work, and to raise a family freely and without the threat of deportation or separation. And we will never stop fighting for this vision." Cecil, you should know one thing. We believe that every person has a right to live and not be separated from their parent forcefully. We will stand on behalf of the unborn, because at least the dreamers can speak up for themselves. The 328,348 babies that your organization killed last year never had that chance.
Friday, September 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hurricane Harvey, which killed 60 people, may end up costing $150 billion. But this is the sound of Irma. Hurricane Irma became the most powerful Atlantic hurricane on record, Category 5. It's over 800 miles wide. It is roughly the size of Texas. Let me say that again. It is roughly the size of Texas. Sustained winds of over 185 miles an hour for more than 24 hours. Gusts over 200 miles an hour. It couldn't, I mean, it really couldn't have been, I mean, if you want to make the case for the weather machine, Stu made a pretty good case this morning before we went on the air. If you look at the way this thing is tracked, it is almost as if the weather machine, or what I like to call God, just kind of is snaking it through. Nope, don't hit them. Nope, don't hit them. Nope. Miami? Yes, hit them.
Oh, it's not God. This is clearly George Soros.
Is that what it is?
It has to be Soros. I'm not normally an Infowars.com guy, but right. I mean, with this one, I don't see how you... It seriously looks like if you were playing a video game designed in your job, which they have these. They have these with the plague video games where you try to spread the plague as fast as possible. Yes. If you had a hurricane video game in which you were trying to create the most damaging situation possible... You watch the center of the storm. It navigates between all these tiny islands.
Which would slow it down.
Which could slow it down if it goes over land. And it stays over water. And it navigates through all of these like a maze. And then it comes up from the very bottom of Florida and goes up the entire length of the peninsula and then curves back into the United States, into the mainland, just to dump a bunch of rain after it is no longer a hurricane. It's obviously not a weather machine, but it looks like what would happen if you had one.
It is truly remarkable. And if you are sitting in traffic, can you imagine being on some of these causeways, some of these bridges that go on for miles and miles and miles and miles over the Everglades, and you are sitting there going, I don't know if I have enough gas. I would love to hear from you if you are sitting in that traffic today.
Yeah, I love this question from Twitter, sent to @WorldOfStu from Chris. I would love to hear discussion today. What does a hurricane evacuation look like in a world full of electric cars? I mean, I guess in theory, in this world where there's a lot of them, there's more infrastructure and you can pick up electricity a lot more easily.
Yeah, but you don't recharge it quickly.
I know. I mean, I think the market eventually addresses that, maybe with switching batteries out and everything. If we got to a world where that was the case, right, where you're talking 70% of cars are electric. What right now, you're in Miami and you're leaving with a Tesla, that is a real problem. I mean, your mileage is not, it's not designed for that situation, really. It's not its best use.
There's just nothing. It is what's amazing to me is, do you remember when I said everything that you thought you could trust, you won't be able to trust? Where everything you thought you could count on, it is absolutely everything right now is upside down. Everything is in chaos. It is remarkable how it is. I don't know if we've even paid attention to this. My apologies to California, to Washington State, and to, is it Montana? Where's the other disaster? Montana and North Dakota. We have another catastrophe going on. We have wildfires in Washington and in California. I didn't read about them in Oregon, but does Oregon have wildfires as well? I saw a time-lapse photography that we're putting up on glenbeck.com of the wildfires in Washington State. It's terrifying. It's just terrifying, and I've never seen anything like it. And we have a drought now happening in North Dakota and Montana that they're saying is going to cripple the farmers. We are a nation that is is being told, hey, you guys should get back together. We are a nation that has the opportunity right now to come back together and to stop separating ourselves and stop fighting for things that are crazy, just truly crazy. Think of what is important in your life. Think of you being on that bridge today, looking at your gas tank and going, I'm not going to make it off this bridge. And a Category 4 hurricane is coming your way. Imagine being stuck someplace. Everything that you have is in your car, and your kids are in the car. Imagine looking outside and going, we're not going to get, I can't get out of here. I can't get out of here. Kids, we're just going to stay in the house. Does anything matter? Does Donald Trump being a jerk or not a jerk matter? Does the media and its lies, does it matter to you? Does Hillary Clinton's new stupid book matter to you? None of this matters. What matters is what mattered on 9/12. Isn't it fascinating to you that we are being hit so hard, and we will look this year at 9/12, and most of the destruction will be behind us, and the cleanup will be headed our way. The choice to come back together and be decent to each other, our choice is going to happen again on 9/11 and 9/12. I know it's not planned. You know, just like there is no weather machine.
And, says you.
And Donald Trump isn't controlling the weather, and neither is George Soros. But it is an interesting coincidence that we are facing the same choice we did almost 20 years ago. Now, how do we behave this time around? My guess is exactly the way we behaved the last time.
So if you want to get involved and support the relief efforts associated with Hurricane Harvey and coming soon, Hurricane Irma. But for Harvey, text the phrase M1 Harvey to 50155. M1 Harvey to 50155. And then choose the amount that you would like to donate, and you'll be able to choose to donate via e-check or credit card. Again, it's M1 Harvey to 50155.
And the same will be happening with Irma as well, or you can just donate at mercury1.org. We already have people stationed all over Florida with food and water and ready to go in once the storm passes.
Mercury.
Mexico was just hit by an earthquake, 8.1 on the Richter scale. I believe is it the largest one ever to hit Mexico, at least in modern times?
One of the biggest ones ever recorded.
8.1 on the Richter scale. It happened down by the border of Guatemala. It was felt here in the United States. It just happened in the last couple of hours. Our prayers are with Mexico. I will tell you, droughts, fires, floods, hurricanes, earthquakes. It's either George Soros or, you know, it's one of those things where you could easily be convinced, you know what, put on your Nikes, crawl up to the top bunk, and just, we're just waiting for the spaceship to arrive, because this is the end.
Haven't we arrived at that moment where, isn't it time to kind of just shut this thing down? We've done a really? Lot here. We had a good run.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as you're talking not as us, but as humans.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of at the, it's like you own Blockbuster Video, mm-hmm. and you have like three stores left. You know what? Yeah. Maybe it's just time to shut them down. Yeah. Maybe this is the time we just move on with our lives and sign up for Netflix. We're kind of there.
Or the trip to Mars.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think it's time to abandon at least this planet.
I mean, if we want
to keep humanity
going,
let's
go do this
fine.
To another planet.
Yeah.
Let's start over and do this to another planet.
I like that.
Yeah.
And it's funny with all the horrible things going on. I mean, earthquakes, hurricanes, fires, war. Mm-hmm. You do see those things that give you hope, that give you really bright signs.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, like, for example, the New England Patriots losing last night.
Yes! That is...
All the tragedy... This week has been a depressing news week. We've done a lot... And what do? We have to talk about the big stories, and we've heard people saying, well, that's a little depressing what you guys talk about.
You guys are talking about the nuclear destruction from North Korea, and thousands of people underwater, and more hurricanes are coming, and you got earthquakes, and you got fires. Why aren't you guys more positive?
I don't know. I can't trace a path to figuring out how that happened.
We actually have had calls to the office this week. Glenn, we're a little concerned that the show is a little gloom and doom.
It's because there's gloom and there's doom.
Hang on just a second. I don't know if you've opened up your window and looked outside at the world we're in. It's not like I'm predicting these things are coming. They're here. It's like, okay. So tell me about the New England Patriots, because I'm about to become a sports fan.
Well, the Patriots, we got to see them lose last night. In fact, I think it was USA Today that had predicted them to have a 16-0 undefeated season. Game one. Kansas City hung a nice big L on them, and I loved it. I loved every second of it.
We have, by the way, Bill O'Reilly coming up in about 37 minutes that you don't want to miss. And also, later on in the program, the one and the only, Mr. Don Imus, is going to be joining me.
I don't think that's a good idea.
I'm not really sure, especially after our email exchange yesterday.
Interesting word usage by Don in the email you told me about.
Let me see which part of it I could use on the air. He said, I believe the was in that sentence.
Yeah, I remember that one. And he spelled it right.
The rest of it, I don't think I can repeat on air.
Well, we think he's coming on. I will say, he never actually agreed to this interview. You offered him to come on the air, and he said, and you asked him, what do you want to talk about? And he said, it's none of your effing business what I talk about, was his response. And that was us saying, okay, yeah, he's going to come on. Okay.
Right.
I guess that's a yes.
And I had just said, you know, I really want to talk to Don about this scam that happened with the guys who replaced Don Imus.
One of the guys.
Yeah. Boomer Esiason isn't involved. But one of the guys who replaced Don Imus on WFAN, and he was involved in a Ponzi scheme. And it's a pretty big deal. And
$5.6 million, allegedly.
So I wrote to Don and I said, hey, I want to talk to you about a Ponzi scheme tomorrow. And he said, I don't know what they are and I have no interest. And I sent him the article and he said, I'm not talking about. And he went on this tirade for a while. And I said, well, you know, we're open if you ever want to talk about it. And he said, give me an effing number and a time.
So, it's not a yes.
It's not a yes. So we're kind of rolling the dice. He may be on. He may not be on. But if he is on, I'm not suggesting he's going to be in a good mood.
Mercury.
Aaron Watson Aaron Watson, a fantastic country star who is a friend of the program, friend of humanity, and, of course, a great Texan, is doing a concert next week to help with the hurricane relief. And it's amazing how everybody all around the country from all walks of life pitching in to help. Welcome to the program, Aaron. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, sir? Long time no talk.
I know. Well, you know, you're a big star and got that, well, that big Hollywood life of yours.
Let me just tell you how big a star I am and how Hollywood my life is right now. Right now I'm in West Texas, and I've got my paint clothes on, and I'm fixing to do some painting with the wife. That's how Hollywood I am.
Yeah. And not like artistic painting. You're like painting a room or Yeah.
Yeah, we're painting concrete. It's so much fun.
It's beautiful and glamorous. So, Aaron, I just wanted to get you on real quick just to give you a quick plug on what you're doing next. I think it's next Saturday. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, we're playing at the – we had a show fall through down near the Houston area and because of the hurricane. And we're going to – the folks at the Silver Saloon there in Terre Haute, we've been playing there for years. And it's just it's an incredible venue. It's a big place. And they invited us to come out, and we're going to help raise some money for the hurricane victims. But, you know, it's not just about that night. You know, it's like everyone's seen on the news, we need everybody to have this type of passion and fire about rebuilding Houston and every little town along the coast for the next 2 years. I mean, because right now it's in the headlines, but it's going to take a long time to recover from billions and billions of dollars of damage.
Yeah, they're saying that it's going to take it'll be at least 8 years before things are back to normal. And we haven't even started on Florida yet. We're expecting that this weekend. Okay, so how do you get tickets, and where's the money going?
Well, we've got a couple of different ideas where we're going to put the money right now. That, you know, the state has their big fund that the governor set up.
Yeah.
So we've been jumping behind that. But, you know, I'm also real fond of this this thing called Mercury One. And, you know, I'm partial to those guys. So, you know, I know some people there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be making some calls there. And actually next week, I'm going into the studio and I'm going to make an album for the good folks at Mercury One to use. And they can use that to help out with Houston and Florida and
everything else,
whatever their hearts desire. But,
thank you.
Man, you guys set a great example for all of us, so thank you.
Appreciate it. Aaron Watson, and Aaron Watson, of course, is just a great country star that you need to know. And so you know, also, we have raised now over $2 million at Mercury One, and we've served 335,000 meals just in Houston over the last 9 days. Team Rubicon, we have an update on that. We're bringing in, I think, 1,100 volunteers, and we've purchased all of the plane tickets so those veterans can come in and help people in Houston rebuild. And we have semi-trucks on the ground now in Florida, ready to go in as soon as that happens.
Aaron Watson, you can catch him coming to your town. He's going to be in Texas. He's in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana. And they're even allowing him into Washington, D.C. and Massachusetts this
holy
month,
cow,
which I did not think was allowed. Go to aaronwatson.com/tour to get the details.
All right. Pat Gray, Unleashed. Pat is a little, he's been on a tirade, and there's a lot of stuff to be on a holy tear about this week, but he's got a low pressure system moving into into his area, and welcome, Pat.
Ah, thank you. Good to be here. As Stu was pointing out off the air, I actually have a Twitter page now.
Shut up.
This is
a
huge
Twitter page. Shut up.
Yeah. What is the Twitter page?
I don't know.
Why am I saying it? This is a big thing. I think people, you know, sometimes Pat can get fired up about occasional things people may have noticed. However, the thing that people are most angry about against Pat is the fact that he's avoided Twitter all this
Twitterless,
time.
Completely Twitterless.
He's been Twitterless Pat all this time. Now he is at Pat Unleashed.
at Pat Unleashed.
At Pat Unleashed.
Mainly good thing he said because, that because I had no idea.
Mainly because he is the only guy in media that could have had his name Pat Gray, at Pat Gray on Twitter, but now some like homeless person. Yeah.
Some realtor or something. Yeah.
Seriously, at Pat Gray, I think, tweeted three times in 2015, and that's it.
Oh,
that's
really?
It. You could have had it any of these times.
Could have had it.
And the person doesn't even use the account anymore. But at Pat Unleashed does. I like it.
Also, thumb up me on Facebook, too.
thumb up me.
Yeah. Okay. On Facebook.
That sounds awkward, but okay.
All right. So this is going to be another tough weekend with Irma barreling down. And to me, we're naming these storms all wrong because Irma, doesn't that sound like a frightful. Big bad hurricane.
Yes.
Harvey sounded like a big bad hurricane. So instead, why don't we start naming them things like Blaine? Hurricane Blaine couldn't possibly develop into anything. No.
Right.
Could it? I mean, no self-respecting hurricane on earth could be named Blaine or Ambrose or Aubrey and turn into something. It just can't happen.
Yeah. Right, right.
So we're going about this all wrong. But this has really been deja vu watching the evacuation in South Florida because we did the same thing with Houston just on less notice in 2005. At the very end, they said, okay, evacuate. And so 3.7 million people tried to do that at the same time.
That seems like a really bad idea.
A really bad idea.
Can I just put Jamie on real quick because she's on the road in Florida evacuating right now. Jamie.
Hi, Mr. Beck.
How long have you been sitting in traffic and what does it look like?
Well, I'm not actually sitting in traffic yet. I'm going down to return later and sit in it. I run a truck and I bring groceries back to the stores that are out of stuff.
Wow.
We've got, you know, all your three main arteries are so clogged that we're taking rigs down back roads and side streets.
Holy cow. And Jamie, I got to tell you, we will keep you in our prayers. There is no, you want to talk about a dangerous situation. Hey, be in a big tractor trailer as those winds come. God bless you.
We'll park them before, but we're the first line going back in as soon as it clears.
Wow.
I mean, I can't even go home. To brace and secure. I'm hoping and praying that my kids are taking care of everything because I'm running, you know, on 14 hours a day and 10 hours of sleep and doing it again the next day. We lost everything to the storms 11 years ago. We lost everything but my little family of four. And we can rebuild. Florida can rebuild, but we can't replace the people.
Jamie in Florida in a tractor trailer going to deliver aid and help. We keep you in our prayers. Pat, you sat in this, or you actually didn't, because I remember I called you and I said...
Yeah, we were talking about it on the air, and you were telling
you
me how stupid
out.
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's a nice relationship you guys have.
It is. It's
Well,
it's
I only said he was stupid because I love. Cared.
Yeah.
Right, of
yeah.
course. I was like, you got to get out of there.
This was, what, 2 or 3 weeks after Katrina, so everybody was afraid that you know, we were all going to die if we stayed. But we prayed about it pretty earnestly and decided we needed to stay, and so we did. And then I was really glad we did because, you know, everybody was stuck. 100 people died, many of them of heat stroke. You remember that bus filled with senior citizens caught on fire? 24 of them died. It was horrific. So hopefully this will go a lot better in Florida. I think they've given them a little more leeway and a little more time to get out.
You're sitting there after your experience. You're sitting there in Miami, Florida. And you know you got to get out. I mean, this is going to hit Miami.
Oh,
it's going
to
be
bad. You have to leave. You have to leave.
So how do you do that when you know I'm going to probably be sitting on the highway?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Are they opening the other side? Are they opening the southbound lanes at all?
I would hope so. For northbound traffic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take the freeway and open both sides.
Eventually, surely they will. I mean, this is the thing. You're at that point now where they're getting pretty good at forecasting these things at least, say, 4 days in advance. You really, once you see you're in the path of one of these things, you need to leave not one day early, but 4 days early or 5 days early.
Yeah.
And, you know, about half of the time, you're just going to wind up being frustrated because you left for no reason. But these things can get really
better
ugly.
Than getting stuck in the gridlock.
Yeah.
The Houston thing was the greatest gridlock in American history. So hopefully they can avoid that.
Holy cow. I've been to New York with the president.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
But the other thing was, have you guys heard about the flooding in Asia? Have you talked about that at all?
No, we just got to the fires of the East Coast and the drought of the Midwest.
This is the weirdest thing. In India, Bangladesh, and Nepal, 40 million people have lost their homes and livelihoods.
What?
1,300 people have died. 1,300 people have died, up to 40% of them children. I saw nothing about this. We have some friends staying with us at the house this week, and she said to me at the dinner table, so what do you think of, I mean, the Houston thing's bad, but what do you think of the thing in Asia? Like, the thing in Asia? What thing in Asia? She said, well, thousands of people have died in flooding at about
fires
the same
flood?
Time.
Floods.
Flooding, yeah. It's the monsoon rains.
Did you hear this morning about Mexico?
Yeah, 8.1 magnitude
largest
earthquake.
Yeah, maybe the largest ever.
In a century, at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It's unbelievable.
I mean, what is... It really... I mean, it is... And I don't believe this, but I'm just telling you, it is... You wouldn't be hard-pressed to go to a church someplace where, like, everybody needs no. to put on our tennis shoes and come
repent.
On up and repent and get up in the attic because the spaceship is coming and Jesus is coming. You wouldn't be, it's not hard to convince you.
No.
What's your take on that? I mean, do we just shut this sort of planet down and figure something else out? Or?
I think we do. I think we stop certainly all human life.
Okay.
So that the planet can live.
Right.
Because the planet is trying to commit suicide right now.
It does seem to be.
Yeah, so
it
we shut down all human life.
Or just trying to get rid of the virus.
Right.
That is.
That is humanity.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. At least the Patriots lost, though.
No, it's interesting how Pat missed the point on, you know, he's saying we got to come up with kinder names. Irma sounds like a woman who is a little upset. And we should come up with kinder names. I believe, if we're not talking to Mr. Pat 1940, he would understand the real problem is how dare us assign gender to these hurricanes.
That is a great point.
How do we know Harvey identifies as a male storm and Irma identifies as a female storm?
We don't know. And how do we know if they're male or female at all?
It's the oppressors once again at work. How dare us? We should listen to each hurricane. Let them say their gender. Let them decide their name.
Mm. And this is the problem with unleashing Pat. Maybe he should be leashed.
Maybe he should.
Maybe he should be leashed on his new show. Starting Monday, by the way, on The Blaze. Pat Gray Unleashed. Very excited for that.
Harvey and Irma have been married for over 75 years. Not the hurricanes. It's Harvey and Irma Schluter. They've been married for 75 years. He just turned 104. And she will be 93 in November. They both remember vividly the major events of the last century. They remember the first time they ever saw an airplane. They remember the Great Depression. They remember, obviously, the wars. Neil Armstrong walking on the moon. Irma just said recently she remembers that it was a cool and cloudy day, the day John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Now, as they celebrate their 75th wedding anniversary, we've named two storms after them. And they said, what are the odds? And as you get to know Harvey and Irma, they are the exact opposite of these two storms. They got married in 1942, and she wanted to uh, she wanted to wait to get married, and he said, no, let's get married right now. He worked as a barber. They found their way to Spokane, Washington. What the interesting thing about these guys, they have taken in over 100 foster kids. They were foster parents, and most of them mentally or physically disabled. Really, truly wonderful healers, Harvey and Irma.
Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth.
Never let a crisis go to waste. And that was the principle that was in action this week. Only 17 senators voted nay yesterday on the idea of combining hurricane relief and raising the debt ceiling. Only 17 people saw this for what it was, manipulating a crisis. Did the other 80 congressmen take no issue at all with using federal aid for Hurricane Harvey victims as leverage? This was ransom money, bought and paid for to ensure the players on Capitol Hill get to play their little games in the months to come. I have a message for those in Washington. And anybody who is using the threat of hurricane relief money to further their agenda, keep your damn money, every last cent of it. We don't need your help, and we'll take care of our own. If there is one thing that Hurricane Harvey has taught us, not even taught us, reminded us, through all of the cacophony of lies in the media, we heard this: the American spirit is as strong as it has ever been. And we didn't wait around for you to come and save us. We saved ourselves. We didn't beg for government money and government assistance. We all got into our cars, our trucks. We had neighbors that had boats that just took it down themselves and rescued people. While they were in Washington cutting backroom deals, we were opening up our wallets and our lives and our homes in droves. I don't know if this has really hit you yet, but J.J. Watt took to Twitter and raised over $20 million, and that number is still climbing. Michael Dell gave $36 million of his own money. $16 million has been given from sports franchises. Hollywood has even stepped up with over $10 million. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce reported that companies such as Bank of America, Verizon, Coca-Cola, Google, IBM, Shell, all have donated over $141 million, and that number is going up every single day. As of last night, Mercury One and this little audience has raised over $2.1 million, and that number will be well over five soon. And this money? None of that money is going into some politicians' hands so they can take a cut, spread it to their friends and their families and their special interests that will help them get reelected. This is cash going directly from the people, directly to the people who have lives and families and businesses that actually need it. There's a ton of work to be done in America. And America had become a country that relies on federal help when disasters come. But that doesn't mean you in Washington have to take advantage of those in need. Never let a crisis go to waste. How about we think differently? Let's think like Texans. To those in Washington playing your little games, we dismiss you. Stand aside. We've got this.
Friday, September 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com has a new book coming out next week called Killing England. He'll be talking to us about that coming up in the next couple of appearances. But welcome to the program. Lots to discuss with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. Bill.
Beck.
O'Reilly.
I'm standing by. What can I do for you?
I'm just wondering, were you at all disgusted by the game that was being played in Washington this week?
You know, I understand the game, and have been at it so long that maybe I'm jaded, because I understood exactly what was happening there. What I can't understand, let me ask you this, because you're much more impassioned about government spending than I am. I see the danger as you do, but I'm more of let's deal with a problem that we have to deal with today. Why do you think that the Democratic Party, almost 100% down the line, and the people who support the Democratic Party, want a government that is heading toward bankruptcy and insolvency? Why do they want that?
I think they're looking, I think most of them are just so self-centered. They believe, much as many of the banks did in 2007, there's not going to be a collapse. We can play this game forever. We got it. They're bigger minds than us. Look, there's too much to lose. It's not going away. I think the majority of them feel that way. But I do believe there are those that see a reset coming and get it while you can, and push it over the edge, and the reset will be, we can fix all these things.
Okay, but one more question on this. Philosophically, the Democratic Party has now basically said, we will spend as much of the taxpayers' money as we can spend, all right? We're not going to cut back, we're not going to save, we're not going to do anything. We're going to spend as much as we have, and we're going to tax people up to their eyebrows and make it very hard for people to live on a daily basis, because so much is being taken out of their paychecks, and every time they turn around buying a gallon of gas, they got to pay a tax. Everything's taxed. So they want to weaken the individual back.
Yes.
Right? They want to weaken the individual American. They want the individual American to be weaker, because money provides security and power. All right. Why? Why? I've never gotten that philosophy. I've never figured that out.
Well, because they believe, Bill, in this this socialist utopia that doesn't exist, and they believe that they believe the people are not smart enough, and they believe that if they can take their money, they can redistribute it in a way that is much more fair. I mean, I don't know if I posted something that I had not read from Bill de Blasio. He said it, I think, a couple of years ago, and he was talking about how he wants a very, very large, powerful state, one that takes the land and the money, and they decide the best way to spend it and the best way to use that land. That's crazy. But he believes,
a communist.
Yeah, I know. He believes it'll actually work.
I live here, so I know. He'll never admit that he's a communist, but he is. So that's a fringe crazy person, de Blasio. Here's the point. I don't believe that rank and file registered Democrats, and millions of them, right?
Yes.
My family was. All right. Rank and file registered Democrats. I don't think that they know or understand that their party, at this point in history, wants them to be weaker, is eroding their personal power by saying, we're going to bankrupt the nation and fund every crazy thing that goes down. If they could, Beck, they pour trillions of dollars into global warming, whatever that may be. If the Democrats could do it, they'd do it. And they tax people even more to do it.
So can I ask you a question?
I never understood it. I never understood why. And I'm not a Republican, by the way. I'm an independent.
Well, can I ask you a question? I don't think there's that much of a difference. I mean, tell me, and there is on degrees, but not on direction. Tell me the people who are actually standing up for responsible spending and getting the debt and deficit under control. Tell me who on the right is doing that, except the ones who are all being deemed. No, they're all being deemed as those are radical, crazy people that just want everybody to starve. No, they're not.
No, and I think that there are many Republicans who want to cut spending. I mean, I think that's fairly obvious because that's the battle that they fight every single day. But let's get to this week, and you're agitated about the raising the debt limit in the country. The reason that happened was because the Trump administration is in dire trouble. Okay, dire trouble. And the Trump administration needs to pass tax cuts, which will help individual Americans, obviously. And in order to have those tax cuts pass, or at least a shot of getting them approved, they had to get this debt thing off the table, because these tax cuts have to be approved in the next 45 days. And if you had a brawl over the debt ceiling, that would make the passage of tax cuts less likely.
Do you really
did what he did.
Do you really think that the GOP or this administration is prepared to cut tax pass legislation on meaningful tax cuts in the next 45 days?
They have to.
Everyone I've talked to on Capitol Hill say there's no way that that can happen. There's just no way. They're not even
prevailing wisdom. I know it's the prevailing wisdom that it's not going to happen because these the mechanics are just too inefficient. All right. However, it's a brawl to assign the blame. So if Trump gets a bill, which he will, if he gets a bill and it says that corporate tax rates are cut to 15% and personal, there's just three brackets and tax filing is simplified. He presents the bill to the American public. And the American public says, yeah, we like that. That's good. We want that. Then the Democratic Party is weakened severely in the short term. Now, whether it gets passed or not, okay, but if the Democrats vote against it, then they're pretty much dooming themselves for next year's midterm elections. That's what's going on now. So it's brinkmanship. Bring the tax cut to the American people. And if the Democratic Party doesn't do it, then that party is going to be severely weakened. That's exactly what's happening.
It seems, you know, like brinksmanship. To me, it looks like flailing. Because you started the conversation with why do the Democrats in Congress, not the average Democrat, but how come these guys just want to spend us into oblivion, et cetera, et cetera?
Right.
How are you going to get them? Any of them, if that's your point of view of who they are, how do you get any of them to say, okay, we've got to lower the corporate tax rate?
There are six Democrats that are running in red states for re-election next year. Trump will be able to peel off probably three or four of them to vote for the tax cuts. Okay? Now, I think McCain and a couple of other Republicans are going to sabotage Trump on the Republican side. So he's not going to get all the Republicans to vote for the tax cuts. There'll be some that won't. But I think the calculation is if we can get four Democratic senators to vote for it, then we can pass it. And I think that's what it's coming down to right now.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. Our conversation continues on Hillary Clinton and so much more in just a few minutes.
Mercury.
Thank you so much for listening. Our thoughts and prayers are with you if you're in the Florida area or in the path of Irma. This storm is the size of Texas. It dwarfs Hurricane Andrew. It is remarkable. So, you know, Team Rubicon is already on this. We're watching Irma as well as the fires in California through Mercury One. City Impact, which is one of our partners for Mercury One, already has 10 semis of relief trucks. They are in Palm Beach Gardens, Bradenton, and Miami already. Relief aid trucks are on the way additional. Plus, we have served 335,000 meals with Operation Barbecue in the last 9 days. that is in Houston and Victoria. They're on the ground in Beaumont as well, and we need to double our efforts now for Florida. We want to thank you so much for supporting this effort in any way that you do. If you would like to, you can donate to mercury1.org. All of the money goes directly to these organizations that are on the ground, and there's not a dime wasted. Mercury1.org, mercury1.org. Your thoughts on the hurricane, Bill?
Well, first of all, kudos to you, Beck. You know, not a lot of people doing what you do. And, it's very impressive, your organization, and how you're coast to coast. You know, the fires are bad. The fires up in the Montana, Pacific Northwest, California, they're bad, and they're getting no attention because of the hurricane. So anyway, kudos to you. You're using your power for good. The natural disaster situation is always going to be with us, always has been with us, and America's the most generous people on Earth. You said it pretty eloquently in your monologue at the top of the program, that Americans take care of each other, and they do. But there is a role for the government to play. And, I think that I wrote a column for The Hill on Monday and said that the response to the hurricane in Texas, Harvey, was much better than the response to Katrina and Sandy. And it looks like Irma is organized as well. So why is that? What's the difference now to then? And that's an interesting question. So when people, say, oh, President Trump is this or that, and he blah, 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 blah. Well, look, under him, the federal organization is better. And there's no question about that. So, but you'll never hear that reported. You'll never hear that analyzed. And that just shows you, as you put it, the lies the media tells are endless.
But it's also, there's something to be said about, the state of Texas is not the, not the city of New Orleans. The state of Texas
totally different mindset in Texas. You said, we'll solve our own problems. No doubt. There's no question about that. And in New Orleans, you've had generations of here's your house. Here's your food. Here's this, here's that. And then all of a sudden something hits and people are going, well, wait a minute. I have to do myself now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a mindset.
So, Bill, the one of the real problems, I think, is hurricanes are not getting worse. I mean, hurricanes happen, strong hurricanes, strong earthquakes, everything else. These things happen. But we don't build, generally speaking, we try not to build huge cities on earthquake faults. Forget California. We look at things. If California was having an earthquake as often as we have hurricanes, we would never build anything around there. Yet we are now building huge cities right on the ocean that are prone to get hit by hurricanes. I'd like you to go into, should we rethink that whole thing of, you shouldn't be able to get insurance if you're going to build a giant apartment complex right in Miami. I don't know if we have insurance to cover that, at least from the taxpayers. Back in
Mercury.
A second.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly, who has a new book out called Killing England that we'll get to next week. Really, really good book. And you need to read it. I mean, if you're into history at all, Bill O'Reilly is a great teacher. He was a history teacher for a while. And then he decided to inflict himself on all of America and became the legend that is Bill O'Reilly. Now you can see him 5 days a week on his own No Spin News at BillO'Reilly.com, BillO'Reilly.com. Bill, the question is, should the taxpayers have to pay for insurance for buildings that are clearly built in flood zones and hurricane paths when the market says I can't keep my doors open if I insure this area. So no, why should the American people be on the hook for others, especially the rich, who want to build their houses right there in the path of hurricane after hurricane after hurricane.
Yeah, a lot of it's a state-by-state situation. In New York, you have to have insurance if you're near the ocean, and you have to buy FEMA insurance, which is much, much higher. The rates are really high, but you can't just buy and be uninsured for the very reason you're talking about. And a lot of states are like that. And I don't, I'm not an expert in this, but there are
The National Flood Insurance Program is now $25 billion in debt just from Sandy. Right. So yeah, at some point we have to say there's no money here for this.
Yeah, but you can't, because of our freedom, say you can't buy a house on this land.
No.
Whatever.
Right. Hang on just a second. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting that at your own risk and at your own peril. I mean,
I don't oppose that. Yeah. I mean, I don't want ridiculous situations. There's zoning in a lot of places that you can't do this. The environmental protection is very stringent close to the water. So, look, I don't think that that's a huge issue for the American taxpayer. I think that's probably a minuscule compared to the other fleecing that we're taking on a whole bunch of other issues, like disability fraud, which is the worst. That if you really want to look into how the American taxpayer is being conned and stolen from,
yeah,
take a look at the disability situation. That's a disgrace.
Bill O'Reilly, let me ask you switch back to politics here for a second. There are several deep conservative thinkers who say that what happened this weekend was Donald Trump took a hard turn to the left and turned towards Democrats. And one of the things they point to was he went up with Senator Heidi Heitkamp, who he said, you know, is a good woman, they're great people, they work hard, blah, blah, blah. She has voted with the president 40% of the time, while Jeff Flake votes with the president 93% of the time. And the president is doing everything he can to get Jeff Flake out of there. And there's a real chance in Trump country up with Heidi Heitkamp that she's one of those people that's actually on the bubble and could be replaced. Why is he supporting?
Yeah, but I think the fix is already in, and that Heidi has already told Trump that she'll vote for the tax cut. So I think that's what's that all about. So he's got one Democrat. He needs four more. As for Flake, look, Trump's not ideological. So anybody assigning him a conservative or liberal bent is way out. He doesn't care about that. He's all about the deal, and that's what he says, and that's Trump. Now, the reason he doesn't like Flake is because Flake came out and wrote a book and went on the shows and said that Trump's incompetent. Okay? As soon as you say something like that about Trump, he's going to hate you.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on there.
I've heard that. Let me switch gears to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton has her book coming out. The Democrats don't want to hear from Hillary Clinton anymore. She has, this is an amazing stat. Her approval rating is lower than Donald Trump's approval rating.
I know.
I mean, she's at an approval rating of 30. That is almost impossible for, she has gone away. Trump is actually saying stuff, and her approval rating is still going down. And yet the media would have you believe that Hillary Clinton was such the obvious choice. With her being gone, her approval rating is still going down.
Keeps going down. Even look, the thing about Hillary Clinton is that she's not really a real person. This is just like one of these octagons. I've met her a few times, and it is. I think the word bloodless is my best description of her.
Wow.
It doesn't seem to be any real humanity flowing out of that. And people know that's why she lost the election. They didn't trust her. They didn't like her. It wasn't about Trump. It was about her. But in the book, from what I understand, she blames a lot of her losses on sexism. And I've had it. Beck, I don't know about you, but I've had it with sexism, racism, homophobia, had it. And as soon as I heard that, I go, I'm not reading a book. That disqualifies me from reading a book. That her excuse for losing the election is sexism? Come on. I mean, she got hammered by the press, I think that's fair to say, but not nearly to the extent that Trump did. So, you know, Mrs. Clinton, I wish you a happy life. I'm sorry that it didn't work out for you in your quest for power. I thank God that you're not president of the United States. Every day of my life, I thank the deity, okay? Whether the deity is a man or a woman or something, I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
I'm on my knees saying thank you.
I'm willing to say.
And you know, it's not ideological. Vishnu. I run a charitable foundation, as you do. And I looked into the Clinton Foundation.
Oh, I know.
And those people use that charitable foundation for their own benefit. And I don't think there's anything worse that you can do than take charitable concerns and turn it around to benefit yourself. And that's exactly what Hillary Clinton did.
I will say, too, on the sexism charge, the one truly like big decision Hillary had to make naming her VP, she picked a dude. So I don't know what that says, but it kind of seems odd that she'd call sexism. I'm concerned, though, Bill, because your book is coming out, Killing England. And it's going to be competing against Hillary Clinton's book.
And you know they buy warehouses of books.
Mm-hmm. This is are you intimidated by Hillary?
First of all, the reason that she picked a dude for VP is because she was in her surfing mode that week.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
I should have known that.
Second of all, you know, if you read Killing England and you compare the sacrifices and the bravery of Washington and the other patriots to Hillary Clinton. To Hillary Clinton! Who is a step away from being president. You will be shocked. Shocked at how George Washington and the other patriots conducted themselves compared to not only Hillary Clinton, but all modern-day politicians. What has happened?
Bill, you know, Hillary Clinton is advising the Democrats not to give the mantle over to Bernie Sanders. And you have a lot of Democrats. I mean, the Democratic Party is deeply split. You know, Bernie is coming out with
I have to stop you. I love Bernie Sanders. I love him. I think he's the greatest. I want him to have his own sitcom. The Bernie Hour, okay? I want Bernie.
He does. It's called the Larry David Show.
We should all be socialists like he is, and then he can take us to his palatial mansion in Vermont.
Right.
Okay? And Ben and Jerry can be in the backyard, and we can all have a few laughs.
Right.
About the hucksterism from this guy from Brooklyn. I mean, he's about as much socialist as George Clooney, okay? I mean, it's just insane. And people are buying it. The billionaires! Okay, Bernie. You heard it. It's funny. It's amusing. All right? But you're a loon. All right? You are a loon. You honeymooned in Moscow. Who does that? Putin didn't even honeymoon in Moscow. Okay? Putin went to Istanbul, where it was a little warmer. No one does that.
Right.
Stalin refused. The honeymoon in Moscow.
I like how that's not a joke from Bill. He actually knows the location Putin's honeymoon.
I know. I know. But didn't de Blasio go and do something? He was with the Contras for a while. Didn't he also honeymoon
Cuba? De Blasio went to Cuba.
Yeah, Cuba.
Yeah, de Blasio went to Cuba.
Yeah.
He went down there. I guess he couldn't afford the airfare of Moscow as Bernie did.
Well, I mean, Cuba is at least there's a beach in Cuba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in order to go on the beach, you have to pledge allegiance to Fidel and Raul.
Right.
So there are qualifications for you to dip your toe in the ocean. But these guys just amuse the hell out of me. Anybody in America who thinks Bernie Sanders should be president of the United States, they should move to Cuba, okay? Go there. Or go to Venezuela. Go there, okay? See how Bernie's system works. See it. Touch it. Feel it.
What do you have
coming? I've been to both countries.
What do you have coming up next? What do you have coming up next week, Bill, that you want to alert the audience on?
Well, we're Killing England is tied into this statue controversy where they're trying to, wipe out all the statues of everybody.
Yeah.
And I want everybody to read the book because then you'll have an argument. You'll have a debate. you'll know who Washington and Jefferson and Franklin were as men, okay, how they conducted themselves as people, not myths. Because I'm so fed up with this stuff, this PC madness, I am ripping, Beck, I am ripping. So I'm on a campaign next week to get the word out about Killing England, which will be out in the stores on September 19th. And we're going to tie it right into the PC madness in this country, and we're going to stop it. We're stopping it, Beck. We're going to have a telethon to stop it. No more PC telethon. Me, you, and that'll probably be it.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. He will be on Tuesday to tell us the story of his book, and it is a tremendous book. You can order it online now at BillO'Reilly.com or wherever great books are sold. Yes, where they're selling great books, they're also selling this one from BillO'Reilly.com.
Mercury.
The one, the only, the always outspoken, never predictable, have absolutely no idea if we'll even have a license after he's off the air. Don Imus joins us in about 40 minutes from now.
Coming up after that, Kinky Friedman will be joining us. And then Bo Deedle on the Imus in the Morning
program.
I don't
think Bo is around anymore, is he?
I don't know if he still has him on.
We'll have to ask him. If he's in a good mood, I'll ask him. Because I think Bo, didn't Bo go to jail or something?
I don't think,
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
But maybe.
I thought I read that someplace. All right. Let me tell you about something that is really concerning and awkward. And the press doesn't seem to really care about this. There was a town hall meeting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where a left-winger got up and asked Pat Toomey if his daughter had been kidnapped. Now, the only audio that we have, his question has been deleted because they didn't want it going out over the air. I wish they would have, because you need to see and hear this, but here's what happened.
Question, and it looks like Brittany's ready.
Our next question comes from Simon from Northampton.
Hello, Senator. Thank you, Simon, for... coming to answer our questions tonight. Sure. I know we've been here for a while. You probably haven't seen the news.
He says, can you confirm whether or not your daughter, Bridget, has been kidnapped? Then it goes in. And Toomey sits there for a minute and says, this goes on for about 4 minutes. And then he says, the reason why I ask is because this is the reality of families that suffer from deportation.
Unreal.
Now, listen to that question again. I know we've been here for a while, so you probably haven't seen the news. Can you confirm whether or not your daughter, Bridget, has been kidnapped?
Imagine getting that question.
No.
You'd obviously think it's real because it's so specific.
Yes. You know the name of my daughter. You're saying that we've been here for a while. You're saying that you haven't seen the news, but I have information that you don't. The panic that that would cause.
And it was all just to make a silly, ridiculous point, which doesn't make any sense at all, about illegal immigration.
He says, the only regret I have now is that the focus has been on me and not the question that I asked.
Well, when you try to basically make a senator feel like their kid has been kidnapped, you know, they don't react well to that.
How about anybody?
I mean, anybody, but particularly when you're talking government officials, there's usually not a positive reaction.
Toomey said, asking questions that are based upon kidnapping a child is not only reprehensible, but it is inherently threatening. Yeah. People who were there in the room said that it was creepy and terrifying.
Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth.
You know, perhaps The Art of the Deal needs a sequel. The chance to make a real positive difference. Turns out the deal Trump cut with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi to increase the debt ceiling for 3 months wasn't the only deal he was working on. Trump and Schumer also discussed developing a plan that would no longer require Congress to routinely raise the debt ceiling. What it would do is get rid of the federal limit on government borrowing, so they would never, ever have to discuss the debt ever again. First reaction is, wow, that's a little irresponsible, maybe of the highest order. And of course, that's completely true. However, the second reaction, maybe this presents us with a sort of weird, unique opportunity. The debt ceiling has become meaningless. It doesn't mean anything to people anymore. And it's just, oh, what, we're not going to pay our bills? No, that's a complete and total lie. So maybe we do look at this as an opportunity. What if the deal included automatic spending cuts if the budget is upside down? Yeah, I know. Never happened. But call me crazy. But maybe if they had to actually have to have a budget in place in the first place. I know. Having a budget, that's too much to ask, don't you think? Or a two-thirds supermajority to exceed the budgeted spending levels. The principle of this sort of a deal would be to force Congress to prioritize its spending because they're spending too much. And I'm sorry, there's no place to cut. Turtle tunnels comes to mind. That's no big deal. Then cut the turtle tunnels. The only thing we take less seriously than our border is our debt ceiling, and both of them will be the death of us. I like the fact that Washington every so often has to squirm. They have to feel the weight of their own failure and figure out another debt ceiling increase. I like that. The only way that it should go away is if you can actually pass something meaningful to restrain spending, not to continue this kabuki theater that is the debt ceiling. If the president can pull that off, I think he'll sell a hell of a lot of copies of The Art of the Deal, Part 2.
Friday, September 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This is what Irma sounds like right now. If you've never been in a hurricane, you just can't relate. Florida has a history of hurricanes, but two in particular that are truly frightening because of the devastation that it not only made to Florida, but also the devastation that it took on the United States. They both happened in the 1920s, and David Petruzza is here. He's an author and historian and a guy who knows this really well. He follows this time period really well. And the second hurricane, the hurricane of 1928, is called the Forgotten Hurricane because the politicians buried it. They didn't want anybody to know that things were as bad, and they were literally burning bodies in the streets because they knew if people stopped buying land in Florida or stopped going to Florida, that might lead to a depression. And it did. David Petruzza, welcome to the program. How are you?
Great to be back.
So, David, and I know this is not your area of expertise, but you know, you were the first guy that came to mind when I started thinking about the 1920s and how we got into the Great Depression. Because one of your books, 1920, the Year of the Six Presidents, you look at the way 1920 happened and when what kind of spawned what brought on the Roaring Twenties. Can you outlay a little bit of what was happening in Florida that these hurricanes kind of stopped?
Yeah, what's going on is you've got three big areas of speculation in the country. In the 1920s, there's a stock market, which everyone knows about. At the beginning of the decade, before anything else, there's a guy named Ponzi, who is sort of like the Bernie Madoff of his time. and that ends very quickly. But right after that, you've got the Florida land boom. And if any of your people have ever seen on TCM, Turner Classic Movies, the Marx Brothers movie, The Coconuts, it's about how people were flipping land in Florida like crazy. And it was crazy. Sometimes a piece of land, would, a property, would never be built on, and it would change hands three times. People wouldn't even go to look at it. It was just, it was going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And Florida, at the time, is not the Florida of today for a lot of reasons. It's the smallest southern state. It had six electoral votes in 1929. It's got 29 now. It's got fewer people than West Virginia or Arkansas. And when you start piling all that speculation into Florida, the infrastructure is going to crash. It snarled the railway systems. It was a total mess. And then what you had happening, it started to collapse in 1925. But in September of 1926, and September is a really bad month for hurricanes. It's really the peak. And you get a hurricane which blows right through Miami. And the thing about hurricanes then is the loss of life is so much greater. And they are can be as large as what we have today. So, like, don't tell me this is all about global warming, because it isn't. The Great Hurricane of 1780 takes 20 to 22,000 lives in the Western Caribbean. Jeez. The Galveston Hurricane is from 5,000, 6,000, maybe up to 12,000. Best estimate is 8,000 people dead. There are just no warning systems back then, so that people don't know it's coming. This is the great thing about the Weather Channel and everyone else, more or less, getting everyone agitated about this hurricane, Irma, because it's a good thing to be agitated, because people will get the hell out of the way. They don't get out of the way in Miami, which is a much smaller city then. And you get 372 people dying, 43,000 left homeless in a city which is probably not even then 100,000. So things are bad there. And that's followed up the next year by a run on local banks. The banks don't start to get bad in the Depression. They are a lot of runs on banks in the 1920s, a large amount, but most of them occur in rural areas. They're small banks. And so the economic structure of Florida and the Mississippi Valley, there's really crazy bad weather in the United States in that second Calvin Coolidge term. The hurricane of 1926 in Miami is followed by the Great Mississippi Flood of April 1927, where you've got the Mississippi gets 60 miles wide at one point. There are, again, 250 dead. There are a million people affected. It is a great mess. And all of this is going to soften the economy, as is also the overspending by farmers during World War I, because they're producing foodstuffs for Europe and the rest of the world, and they overplant and they overborrow. And so that sector of the economy is weak. And that, more than the hurricanes or the natural disasters, is going to create conditions leading to the Great Depression in 1929. But then you get into the situation of 1928, which is the killer, the absolute killer that you were alluding to before that. And the storm, like all the others, starts out there in the Atlantic Ocean, pounds an island called Guadalupe. 1,200 people die on this small island. The significant thing in terms of warning for the this hurricane, and these hurricanes don't have names until 1953, is for the first time a ship at sea spots one of these things and is able to radio to land that something is coming. So that when it hits Puerto Rico, there are only, only 312 people dead because of the warning system. Mm-hmm. And then people think it's going to hit Miami again, but it hits West Palm Beach. And because it hits to the north, instead of pounding from the ocean with water, it hits Lake Okeechobee, that big freshwater lake in the middle of the Florida Everglades. There are huge amounts of migrant workers all around there.
Yeah.
And the winds causes the lake to slosh over. There's like a called muck dams. It breaks these dams and it floods the south, and then it keeps moving, and it floods the north. And you have thousands of people, absolutely thousands of poor black migrant workers killed. It is such a horrendous situation that there are 1,600 of them buried in one mass grave at Port Mallorca in Martin County. One mass grave. There is fears of typhoid. They have to put people almost at gunpoint to get them back to clear the bodies off the streets. There's another burial ground with 743 in a mass grave, which was unmarked for 6 decades. What you were talking about before is that people didn't want to talk about this situation. It was horrible. And most of the people who did die there were black, were these poor black
right.
Migrant workers. They couldn't identify the bodies because whole families and whole communities were wiped out.
So, David, I've got about a minute here. Help me out on this. As I'm looking, you started with, you know, in the 1920s, you had the Ponzi schemes, you had Wall Street, you had land speculation, and then you had really bad weather situations. As you're watching the news today, does it feel similar at all, or is it my lack of understanding of history?
I think that with the wildfires in the West, the hurricanes hitting again after a merciful hiatus, and the situation in Florida, I mean, we are always at the mercy of Mother Nature or the universe or of God. If we think that we are just going to continue on with our prosperity, we haven't read the Bible with 7 years of fat living and 7 years of famine, and we are always on the verge of some great disaster. We should not get too full of ourselves.
David, thank you very much.
David Petruzza, his book, 1920, The Year of the Six Presidents, one of Glenn's favorites. You can get a link to it at World of Stew on Twitter. Next book is TR's Last War. We'll have him back for this one for sure. Theodore Roosevelt and World War I, His Triumph and Tragedy. I'd like to see how that goes.
Mercury.
It's a massive storm. It can be devastating. You know, I'm a father, I'm a grandfather, I love my family. I hope every parent in the state and grandparent is thinking, how do I protect my family? If you're in an evacuation zone, you've got to get out. You can't wait. The roads will get worse when it gets out. I've canceled all the schools, K-12, state colleges and universities, to open up more shelters. They're good evacuation or sheltering areas.
This
I just want everybody to listen to their local officials.
Is what the people in Florida heard from their governor, Rick Scott. And I think people don't have any clue on what was headed their way. As usual, some people say, I've been through, I ride them through. You don't want to ride this one through. The thing that makes the difference now, these hurricanes would be devastating, much more than they are devastating, if we didn't have an early warning system. And as David Petruzza was just pointing out, that is what happened in the 1920s. Nobody had any warning, and that's why they were literally burying people in mass graves and burning bodies in the streets. It was it was horrific. It was so bad. It's called the Lost Hurricane because people didn't want to remember it, and the politicians didn't want it to collapse the economy of Florida and lead to the Great Depression, which in a roundabout way, it did. Here's the other thing about the difference between 1920s and America today. When these hurricanes hit, they were pretty much taken care of by the local people, the state, and churches all around the country. People bound themselves together, like you're seeing here in Houston. When the flood of 1927 happened in Mississippi, Congress wanted to load up an infrastructure bill with all sorts of things. They wanted to send $1.4 billion down for the flood to be able to help things out. Now, remember, this is 1927, $1.4 billion they wanted to bundle up and send down to the people of Mississippi. The president stopped them from doing it. To give you some perspective, the entire federal budget that year was $3 billion. So they wanted to send almost half of the entire federal budget. The people of Mississippi didn't want it, and they didn't want a government that size, and the people and the businesses took care of it. Now, obviously, there is a place for the federal government when it comes to helping rescue people, etc. But I think the people of Texas and the people of Florida are going to amaze those people in Washington who think, oh, they're just going to sit around and wait for us.
Remember, I mean, you want to do as much as you can yourself. Remember the tax in Pennsylvania for the flood that happened 100 years ago?
Yes.
And they're still paying. If you live in Pennsylvania today, you're still paying this tax, which is supposed to help rebuild a city from a flood of 100 years ago.
Yeah, it was wiped out. This whole city was wiped out. And the state wanted to help pay for rebuilding this city. And so they put a temporary tax in.
Temporary. It's actually been raised since.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They actually raise it. It happened 100 years ago. We've paid that. We've rebuilt that town. We could have rebuilt it like 100 times since. And they're still raising the taxes on that.
And they will use this, you know, never let a crisis go to waste. They will use this to do all sorts of things. I mean, the left will certainly try for global warming. You'll have people implementing taxes. These costs will go on forever. It's incredibly tragic. It is definitely a change in philosophy of our nation to decide that the federal government is always responsible for this.
We are the first responders. I am so sick of hearing talk about first responders. That's something that that was made popular by Jimmy Carter, of all people. We think that's been around forever. It hasn't been. In the 1970s, it's Jimmy Carter who started talking about first responders. We are the first responders. And if you believe in that, if you want the government to do less, then we have to do more. I would love for you to get involved in any charity that you feel is responsible and helping out. We are working hard to make sure that we have resources on the ground now in Texas and in Florida. And you can help us help our neighbors by going to mercuryone.org and donate now. Mercuryone.org. Donna.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Every time I say something like what I'm about to say, I in my head, it is always preceded with, good God, the guy's still alive. Don Imus joins us on the program now. Hello, Don. How are you?
That's not good. No fight started in here now, Glenn.
So Don. Well,
you know, first of all, I'm on hold listening to these commercials. You got one for the IRS if you're a deadbeat, haven't paid your taxes. Then the next part is a blood thinner deal. And then the last part, what they give you if you're 85 or you get a deal on a funeral. Well, who's listening to your program?
You. Those were fed down the phone line for you. So Don, first of all, were you affected by the hurricane? Because you live in Texas. Most people don't know
that. We live in Brenham, Texas. We have a ranch here in Washington County. We're 85 miles from Houston. We've got 30 inches of rain here at the ranch. My son, Wyatt Imus, goes to Rice University, which is right in the middle of Houston. And my other son flies fighter jets out of Pensacola.
So maybe this is God just trying to wipe the Imus family out. Have you thought of that?
Aren't they?
Yeah, it does sound that way.
So we did not. We weren't flooded here because we're at a high point in the county. But, you know, 30 inches of rain, because the house is a 10 or 11,000 square foot house, got a brand new copper roof on it, and the roof started leaking. So, but nothing like this. God, these people have said, hey, what's this Operation Barbecue thing you're doing?
We thought that it would be, helpful to go cook some food. So we are supporting the Operation Barbecue, a group that goes out, and they're actually doing at the convention center. They've provided, I think, 335,000 meals since this all began.
Is that your deal?
Yeah. Well, we're one of their big supporters. Yes.
Okay. Well, and who handles the money?
Not me.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
Yeah. Sure.
But I mean, is the Red Cross involved or FEMA?
I'm not sure what everybody is doing. I know that we're supporting a couple of them. Operation Barbecue, Team Rubicon. Do you know anything about them? They're an amazing group.
I don't.
They are a group of veterans all over the country that when there's a need, they just all kind of come in. And we've flown, I think, 1,100 of them in from all over the country. And they're just going in and they're mucking out these houses.
Well, Deidre, I miss you, my lovely wife, you've met her.
Yeah.
Well, we call her El Chapo around the ranch here.
Yeah.
We wanted to give some money, but there are certain organizations we won't give any money to, so maybe off the air you can text me or
sure.
Tell me who it is. We'll be happy to
give you
some money. So,
I'll give you
hey, did you have O'Reilly on?
Oh, geez, here we go.
No, we didn't.
What do you mean? Oh, geez, here we go.
Oh, because Don, the world has been, at each other's throats for the last couple of years, and then we've had a nice break where people come together and they love each other, and it's nice. And I, you know, I did question my wisdom inviting you. I thought, well, you know, all good things have to come to an end. Let's just pile Don Imus into this and reverse the thrusters.
Well, we all know what O'Reilly did, and we all know what I did when I got fired. Trying to be funny, which I shouldn't have been, and I wound up okay. But you know, the thing I was thinking about this morning is we don't know what you're doing.
Wait, what?
No, I mean, there's something you're doing that we the great unwashed out here that we don't know. I mean, you could have a couple of midgets, I can't say midgets, Imus. You could have a couple of little people in your basement with a pony,
right?
And two hookers, and who? But
right.
We wouldn't know that.
You wouldn't have any idea.
But I've
hidden it pretty well, haven't I?
Yes, you have. But here's the thing: you can bet on this. It's going to come out. It's going to come out. So here's what I'm saying to you.
All right. Okay. All right.
Tell us now. Tell me.
I mean,
what did you do to the pony, Glenn?
No.
Glenn, did you try to kiss the pony?
Tried.
Yeah, ponies won't kiss me.
How's your boy Trump doing?
My boy Trump? Don't even start with me on my boy Trump. You're the one who writes to me telling me how much you love him.
You know, it's not the same guy I knew. I knew him for 40 years. That's the same guy, God Almighty.
So did he, there's some people saying that he's become the, yesterday was his first day as a Democrat in office. Do you buy into that?
I don't pay attention to all that. I mean, I'm just waiting for him to say I've had enough and go back to Trump Tower, which he's, by the way, ruined his name and everything else. So, no, he's a moron. Please stop it. Honestly.
Now, wait a minute. I thought this was your guy.
Well, he's not my guy anymore, Glenn, so now what?
So,
you know, I was done with him when he jumped on McCain. You know, his kind of war hero is not one that's captured. Are you kidding me? This fat, blubber-titted moron got five deferments to keep him going to Vietnam.
All right.
You know why he didn't want to go to Vietnam? Because he's a coward.
This is what happens when Don...
You know who did go to Vietnam, got shot down over Vietnam? John McCain, that's who. You know that I was in the Marine Corps? I was in the jungles of Vietnam killing the Kong so people like you could have these stupid little radio programs. What are you talking about? Well, actually, I wasn't in the jungles. I played the bugle in the Marine Corps band. But,
right.
You know,
You were there. So, Don, what has changed in Donald Trump since, you know, you say you know him for 40 years. This is not the guy you knew. What's different about him?
Well, I just thought he was a lot smarter. And, you know, once you're president, you wouldn't think you'd have to defend every slight. You wouldn't think you'd have to validate your presence on the planet with tweets about how big the crowd was or whatever this. I got in a huge fight with him that the press covered and everything back at 25 years ago. He was a bachelor then, and he was posing for some, I forget what it was, and I said he had grandma arms. So he had the big old flab under his arms.
Yeah.
So and he was going bankrupt in his casinos, so I said the boy was going from the back of the limo to the front of the limo. So he took great offense at that and said that now that I wasn't drinking liquor anymore and doing cocaine, I wasn't funny as I used to be. Howard Stern was a lot better. I was delighted to see that Stern voted for Hillary Clinton. But
is there any difference though on how you treated Bill Clinton? I'll never forget the flop sweat on Don Imus.
There wasn't any flop sweat.
Oh my gosh!
About?
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! I felt like I was living, if I would watch it again, there would be no difference between this and the coverage of Hurricane Harvey. There was so much water coming off of you.
I had the guts to stand up there and hammer his ass. And by the way, I did the speech the next day on air. I killed it. What are you talking about?
I agree you did, but I've never seen you squirm like that.
He was glaring at me, and Hillary, she was glaring at me, and they were thinking about walking out. They were so torqued off.
Right. So what is the difference between what you said there and their reaction, and when you talk about grandma arms and to quote you, blubber titties?
I don't know how to answer that question. Don't ask me difficult questions. I like you. I like to call your program. My wife and I wanted to give some money to this deal if it's not some scam. I didn't call up to take an SAT test.
Yeah. All right. How much money are you going to give?
I'd give $100,000 if we would. I'd give $100,000 if it's legitimate.
Wow.
Well, what? It is legitimate, Don. There's not a dime goes through.
I want to know who handles the money. If the Red Cross?
No, the Red Cross
FEMA
has not.
Any of the money?
FEMA and the Red Cross have money. FEMA and Red Cross. This actually, my charity was started because I don't trust FEMA and the Red Cross.
Right,
and so there's not a dime that comes to us. If you market for Hurricane Harvey or Irma or whatever, 100% of the proceeds go right directly to the things that we have earmarked on the site, and you can even say I wanted to go to our Operation Barbecue or Team Rubicon.
You have my email address. I get these little whiny little email from you all the time. send me a note about who handles the money once it leaves Mercury Arts or whatever.
Yeah.
And then where to send the money, and we'll give you $100,000.
All right, that's nice of you, Don. It's a little cheap now that you've gotten rid of the cancer farm. You know, I thought you'd be a little more generous, but
you really are just the worst. And we already know you're weird, and so I just see you sitting in a little fat boy sitting there getting that lap dance from.
All right.
We hit it.
Bye, Don. Bye.
That was Imus in the morning. It'd be Imus.com. You get the updates on the on whatever Glenn's doing with that pony in the basement. It'd be, I'll have that coming up, along with Doris Kearns Goodwin on the other side.
He's awesome.
He is great. I have to ask him for permission to print the emails, the email exchanges from us over the years. For like 10 years, we've been going back and forth on emails. And they're the most cruel,
oh my God,
politically incorrect, just brutal beatings of one another. I mean, just beating of one another.
Relentless. And
hysterical.
There's not a moment of saying, no, but you know, we like you. Like, there's none of that.
No,
in
I
there.
Said that the first time. Yeah, that's right. The first thing, remember this? The first time we went back and forth, and I thought, okay, I'm going to write. Donnie gave me his email address. I can't write something nice because that's not who he is. And so I gave him a backhanded compliment, and he came back even stronger. And so then we just got into this war, and about, I don't know, about six emails in, I decided to say, you know, but really, I mean, you're a great guy and everything else. And he just went off on me. Really? Really? This is who you are? You really need to think you need to say that? Don't ever write to me again. I mean, he's just brutal in mm-hmm. all ways. But what I really like about him is he's a really nice guy, and he can take the punch as hard as he can throw it.
Yeah, and I'll also say we should not brush off the fact that he just offered $100,000 for Harvey relief. It still doesn't change
the fact. He spends that in medication every month.
That's true, but I think that's every week is probably more accurate.
Probably
but.
Every day. But all right. Well, but we accept it, and it is really nice. It's very nice of him.
Mercury.
So, anybody look at that Equifax thing and go, huh, that sounds like it's important. Sounds like that's important. I should probably figure out what that means to me. Oh, well. What else is going on? Equifax is the credit monitoring service, and they have suffered a massive hack, and 143 million Americans have been affected. Is one of the, you know, three major credit reporting agencies, and hackers gained access into the system in mid-May and remained in the network until July.
Oops.
Probably should have had LifeLock.
Yeah, that's right. That was their answer to these things. Yeah. It's like,
here's a brand you've never heard of that's somewhat kind of similar to some of the things LifeLock does. And you can do that, because then if we really screwed up, they'll catch some of it.
Be easier to just have it from the beginning, I suppose. They got not a paid commercial, by the way.
They got the social security numbers, the birthdays, and the addresses. They also pilfered the credit card numbers of about 209,000 people and documents about credit disputes for 182,000. The CEO says, "I deeply regret this incident. Today's a humbling experience for all of us. Equifax will not be defined by this incident." No, I have a feeling that you're going to probably be defined by the fact that a lot of your higher-ups there in the company started selling their stock because they knew that this news was coming out, and the public didn't know.
Three Equifax executives sold shares of the company worth nearly $2 million after the breach was discovered, but before it was announced to the public.
That's not worth that money.
No, that's not going to work out well for you. They actually keep track of who buys and sells stocks.
It's really bad.
It is not a good idea. And not to mention, it looks terrible. I mean, who knows? They could have had this plan for months. I'm sure they'll have some argument for it. But
it doesn't look good.
It does not look good.
Hey, we want to let you know that all this weekend, Mercury One will be working with charities all around Florida and Texas. Please get involved. MercuryOne.org, and our prayers are with you.